Good evening, everyone. My name is Mike, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Mike.
For those that are new, this is our seventh week of this work group. This is not considered an official AA meeting. The only requirement to come here, the only requirement for membership here, is a desire to work the 12 steps out of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. So that means we have a potpourri of afflictions, so to speak. So what we've done for the past 6 weeks is the first week we just did some introduction stuff. We took a look at the circle and triangle. We went through the table of contents, and we looked through and discussed the preface and the forewords. I believe it was the second week that we started with the doctor's opinion. The next week we took a look at Bill's story, and there is a solution. From there, we looked at chapter 3, more about alcoholism, and we wrapped up that chapter last week. Last week we did a wrapper on step 1. As we've been going through the weeks, we've broken up the third step into 3 parts. We've taken the first part of the first step that you see off the wall. We admitted we're powerless over alcohol, and that's everything before the dash. We've taken that and broken it into 2 parts, the body and the mind. We took a look at the body to see how the alcoholic reacts differently to alcohol than normal people, whatever normal is. As Dr. Silkworth says, when a real alcoholic puts any alcohol in his system whatsoever, it sparks off what he called the phenomena of craving, which means I have 1 or 2 drinks and I have to have more. We looked at what we call the second part of the first step as being the mental obsession, how my mind reacts to alcohol, or let's say alcoholism. I don't think like a normal social temperate drinker. The book terms it as insanity. The book terms the thought that precedes the first drink as insanity. The lie that I can drink again, or the lie that this time it'll be different, or I can get away with it. Or we don't even think that much at all before we drink, and we hit something called a strange mental blank spot, or suddenly. Or even in some cases, as we discussed, I believe, a couple weeks ago, some people in here have had a sober blackout. So that happens too. So insanity is not the crazy, mixed up, stupid things we did while we were drinking. It's not the loss of marriages. It's not the crashed cars. It's not all those things. Of course, all those things are insane, but they happen as the result of a chemical, a result of a toxic poison called alcohol. When the big book talks about insanity, it's talking about the thought that precedes the first drink. And then last week, we got into, I don't want to say my favorite, because I really have no favorites, but I guess just what Bill and I have a lot of current experience with, and that's the spiritual malady. And personally, I like to call that the third part of the first step, or if you will, the missing piece, the piece that we just don't really hear too much about in meetings. You hear about all the symptoms of the spiritual malady, but you don't really hear a lot, or at least I don't hear a lot of what that exactly is. What is the crux of the problem? And we found out that the crux of the problem is our selfishness and self-centeredness. And we'll find out more about that in step 3. But the spiritual malady, if you want to refer to the step on the wall or take a look at page 59, it's anything after the dash that our lives have become unmanageable. So we like to use the term spiritual malady, unmanageability, untreated alcoholism,
the root of our troubles.
We use all these things interchangeably. And with that, we put a wrapper on the first step. Last week, we discussed a little bit about an exercise that Bill gave out the previous week called the Step 1 Unmanageability Exercise, which everyone who did it had a lot of fun with, including myself. If you need a copy of that, if you're interested in doing that to see where you are currently with your inward condition, with the spiritual malady, either Bill or myself can email it to you. We don't have any extra copies of that, do we? No. Okay. So as a method of hope or a method of vision in today's packet, and I'm sure Bill will review the packet later on, in today's packet we have the Step 2 exercise, which can take us from the exercise we did in Step 1 and give us some hope and help us build a vision. For all those negative things we saw in the first step, we can build a vision for if we didn't have those things in our life, if those things weren't a part of us, what would our lives look like? And we're going to talk a little bit about that in Step 2.
My name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic.
And Bill.
And Bill.
Welcome to the people that I know. Why don't we start off with the set-aside prayer. It's on the top of the handout this week. If we could just pause for a few seconds, and then we'll say that prayer together as a group, just that top paragraph. Dear God,
please set aside everything I think I know about myself, my disease, the big book, the 12 steps, the program, the fellowship, the people in the fellowship, and all spiritual terms, especially you, God, so I may have an open mind and a new experience with all these things. Please help me see the truth. Amen.
And I don't know if I think we had done this once before, but that prayer isn't necessarily out of the book verbatim, but the parts of the book that point to it are mentioned below. Also in the handout is, on the next page, is this cool thing that I had found called water. I usually open this chapter by reading this, but since everybody has it, you can read it at your leisure. This is actually the first thing I ever found that I really loved that I started handing out to people. And it's gone way too far with the handouts by this point in my life, but that's another story. Then on the next page is there's two groups of people mentioned in We Agnostics. One is on page 52, which is a group of people that are spiritually blocked off. And the first group of people are those that are spiritually connected. So I had thrown this together like a year ago, asking which one more closely describes your current experience. And then the Step 2 exercise that Mike mentioned. For those of you that haven't been here before or didn't do the Step 1 unmanageability exercise, that needs to be done first before you do this, because this builds upon that. This takes those same 15 areas and says, okay, now that we're moving toward the second step, if you want God to restore you to sanity, in those 15 areas, what does sanity look like? You know, it's sort of like in the first step, we find out where we are. In the second step, we find out where we want to get to, and in steps 3 through 12 are how we get there. So, again, this builds upon the Step 1 unmanageability exercise. And, you know, that Step 1 unmanageability exercise sort of catapults us into Step 2, and that Step 2 sanity exercise catapults us into Step 3. And that's pretty much it with the packet. Last week we closed with the first paragraph of We Agnostics, and also that one paragraph on page 52. Yeah, well, I guess I assume we'll touch upon it again tonight. But the first paragraph, I think, is the best overview of the first step. Captured in a couple sentences. It says, in the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism, We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. And then now is where it does the review. It says, one, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely.
So and that's because of the obsession.
The obsession as well as the spiritual malady, which drives us back to the obsession. And then, or two, if when drinking you have little control of the amount you take.
Because of the craving.
Then you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Like we'll see later on when we read how it works, probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And this is also pointing to that you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Here we go.
To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. And again, as we've been doing for the past 6 or 7 weeks, we take statements in this book and turn them into questions to answer for ourselves. So a good way for this one is it possible that if I continue as I am without a spiritual experience, this will mean disaster? And I can ask myself, am I an alcoholic of the hopeless variety? And I believe in Bill's story, we found a really good example of an alcoholic of a hopeless variety. So to be doomed an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. But the screwy thing about that is, they're the only two we got. We have a buddy named Chris, and he always says that this is door number one and door number two, and there ain't no door number three.
What's interesting, too, is that the second time he said it, because back on page 25, he said that we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other was to accept spiritual help. So for me, how I like describing that is, if you're an alcoholic, there's only two directions you can go in, either a lot of booze or a lot of God.
But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were of exactly that type, and they're talking about atheists or agnostics. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. You know, they're trying to avoid the issue of God here. Hoping against hope. Can you imagine hoping against hope? That's like a double negative. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must, of course there are no musts in AA, huh? We must find a spiritual basis of life or else. I kind of get the picture of when I was a little kid, my father pointing a finger at me, you better do this or else. But I don't think that's what they're trying to do.
And of course that or else is kind of a little bit of a warning there, and that's also another statement that can be turned into a question. Do we believe that we must find a spiritual basis of life?
Perhaps it is going to be that way with you, but cheer up. Something like half of us, again, they're saying about 50% of the original fellowship were atheists or agnostics. They had problem with the God thing, so to speak. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics, but our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted or you need not be upset. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. Ask yourself, in my past, have I had philosophies that I tried to use in my life? Or did I try to live my life by a code of morals? The Ten Commandments, you know, on and on and on and on. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. And dare I even say that the 12 steps can also be termed as a code of morals or a better philosophy for life. You know, if they're just sitting up there on the wall shade, or if they're just sitting in the book, you know, they look like a pretty good set of morals or a pretty good set of standards. What I need to be doing with those 12 things is taking the actions. And then I'm just not living I'm just not, there's not just a set of morals and a code of ethics there. It's a way of life, and that's what Alcoholics Anonymous gives us. It's a way of life so that we can have a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening, and we don't have to think about whiskey and a whole lot of other things in our life the way we once did. We could wish to be moral. Again, ask yourself these questions. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. That's why I couldn't make, you know, we talked about 52 last week. That's why I could never make a happy and successful life for myself. I could never do any of those things that page 52 says. You know, that's why I was full of fear. That's why I suffered from depression and on and on and on, because I did not have the needed power. I tried to live my life by willpower, but I didn't have God power. And that's what AA offers us.
And that's why the whole God thing is thrown in the middle of the steps, or in the beginning of the steps. Us trying to be good on our own power. Ask yourself if that's worked in the past, because I know it never did for me. I always felt on the outside. I always felt dishonest, and I always felt fear drove me to do things that I just had no control over. But, you know, starting this chapter is basically all about step two, and starting at this point is when we need to ask our higher power to come in and help us with this instead of us just doing it on our own.
Our human resources, as marshaled or directed by will, add one word to that if you don't mind, self. So I'll reread that. Our human resources, as directed by our self-will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. And if you can become convinced of that statement, if you can become convinced that your self-will never has, is not now, and never will be sufficient to live your life, and that your self-will has always failed you utterly, then you're going to be in a heck of a lot better position when we get to inventory. If you can start seeing that now, if the hopelessness of step one can catapult you into step two, and see, we said it last week, you can't go from step one to step two in a very good mood. Or else, why would you want to? Why would you want to do the rest of the steps if the first step is just about acceptance? If I could just accept my alcoholism, then I would go to AA. I would go to AA meeting after AA meeting, just accepting my alcoholism and accepting the fact that I just can't drink. My problem is I need a little bit more than that. You know.
And the interesting thing is if you can't accept this fully now, you'll see it fully when you do your fourth step.
Yeah. Lack of power. That was my dilemma. I had to find a power by which I could live, and it had to be a power greater than myself. Notice that power greater than ourselves is in italics, so that's probably pretty important, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? And I'm really grateful that this next sentence is here, because they never just leave me hanging in this book. It says, well, that's exactly what this book is about. The book's main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself which will solve your problem. You mean the problem of alcoholism can be solved? You mean any problem in my life today, which is usually created by my self-will, which is usually created by the spiritual malady that I suffer from, which comes from my internal condition? You mean to tell me that if I apply spiritual principles to my life, that those problems can be solved? Boy, what a great statement of hope that offers.
Also, notice it doesn't say that it's going to help you solve the problem. It says that this power will solve the problem.
So that means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And as far as I can tell, in the context of the big book, every time that Bill Wilson writes the word moral, it just means truth. Just means truth. So, this means that we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as truthful. And it means, of course, that we're going to talk about God. Wish we had the echo effect. Here difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. And they're giving us some 12-step tips here. What we've been trying to do as we've gone along in these weeks is not only bring each other through the steps, because that is the purpose of this work group, so that we can all together, including Bill and myself, have a new experience with all 12 steps together as a group. Not only have we been trying to take the steps together, but we've been trying to point out some of the 12-step tips that we call them, that are interwoven all throughout this book. And so again, it says, many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. And of course, we do that in the first visit to a man or a woman. But his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters. And that's why it tells us in chapter 7, working with others, that we don't want to exactly get into the spiritual feature right away. You know, talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism. Talk to him about your experience. Give him a little bit of a sketch about the fellowship. And then you can tell him exactly what happened to you. Then you can tell him how by taking a course of action, the power and grace of God came into your life and you overcame alcoholism. But his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God, for we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. We know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of God which someone had tried to impress them during childhood. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves was somewhat weak, even cowardly. So you can see as we read along in this chapter that they give enough examples to suit every person. You know, for me, I wasn't particularly brought up with any religion. I was born a Protestant, and after birth, it just about ended right there. So it was never really impressed upon me. It was never really forced down my throat. But I have met a lot of people in the fellowship that they've had the exact opposite experience than I have. And they did have a certain concept of God which was really oppressed upon them in their childhood. So I'm really glad that this book gives all different kinds of examples. We look upon this world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, and inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. We looked askance at many individuals who claimed to be godly. How could a supreme being have anything to do with it all? And who could comprehend a supreme being anyhow? Yet, in other moments, and I have had this experience, and I had it when I was drinking, yet in other moments we found ourselves thinking, when enchanted by a starlit night, who then made all this? There was a feeling of awe and wonder, but it was fleeting and soon lost. And in my case, that feeling was fleeting and soon lost because I just said, out of hell with it, and went back inside and got another bottle of Southern Comfort. Yes, we of agnostic temperament have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we were able to, one, lay aside prejudice, and two, express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. Even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power which is God. So I find that statement pretty remarkable. And I just want to break it up into three pieces. That the first thing it's telling me, basically this is just a formula to have an open mind. Lay aside any prejudice. lay aside any old concepts of God or a higher power that you may have had. Just don't get rid of it. Just temporarily put it aside. The stuff that's needed will come back. The stuff that's not needed, it'll just drop off. So set that stuff aside and then express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves. So it's telling me all I need to have is an open mind and willingness. And then the third piece of this is that it says it's impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, but then he goes on to define it anyway, and he says, which is God. So, for me, and I hope this doesn't offend anyone, but for me, the word God, today, 9 times out of 10, I just use it merely for convenience. You know, I'll probably get into this a little bit more as we get deeper into the chapter. But I've gone through all sorts of concepts of God since I've been in AA, you know, and today it's very difficult for me to put a label on any concept. Quite frankly, I don't even know if I have a concept today. I just know that whatever that power is, it exists, and it's there. It is, and you know, as some grumpy old timer, I shouldn't say that. As some elder statesman of our fellowship told me when I was very young in our fellowship, the only thing you need to know about God, Mike, is that there is one and you ain't it. You know, and that kind of makes more sense as time goes on. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. And that's wonderful. I don't need to believe in the same concept of God that my parents did. I don't need to believe in the same concept of God that the preacher tried to impress upon me. I don't even need to believe in the same concept of God as my sponsor. Our own conception, however inadequate, is sufficient to make the approach and to effect the contact with Him or with God. So my own conception is good enough. And all I have to do is make an approach and effect the contact. And I love that phrase, effect the contact, because I always think about, God knows why I would think about hot wiring a car, but when, you know, you have two wires. You know, and what happens in order for the car to start? What happens in order for the electricity to, or the power, so to speak, to flow through? You have to affect the contact. You have to make a contact. And usually what happens is some kind of spark happens when you touch those two wires together. You know? So I need to make some sort of contact with God, even if I don't know what God is, even if I don't know what I'm doing. All I need to do is have a truly open mind and the willingness and some sort of conception, however limited it may be, and give it a try. Say a prayer. That's why we do this set-aside prayer. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took steps 3 through 12. And also, as we go through this chapter, if you're having a hard time, as I did, if you're having a hard time with the second step as far as finding your own concept of God, this book, and usually he does it in capitalized words, this chapter, and all throughout the book, it gives so many different examples of conceptions of God. Do you have those handy? Huh? Don't you usually rattle those off?
What?
Welcome.
I didn't hear what you were saying.
Just the different conceptions of God.
Different names?
Yeah, capitalized words.
Yeah, I don't have that. Somebody that I know put together all of the God references in the big book, but I don't have it.
We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek Him. So this is kind of the third piece of the puzzle as far as the requirements to begin spiritual growth. We talked about two of them in the preceding paragraph. Lay aside prejudice, express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves. Then they give us the third one. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek Him. So I got to lay aside prejudice, have a willingness, and earnestly seek God. And then on the top of page 47, they're going to give us the fourth one, the fourth requirement to begin spiritual growth. But to us, the realm of the Spirit, and there's more capitalized words, is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men and women. Top of 47. When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies too to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Here's the fourth requirement to begin spiritual growth. Do not let any prejudice or old ideas you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth. To effect our first conscious relation with God, and that's another way of saying effect the contact, to effect our first conscious relation with God as we understood Him. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. And that was growth. But if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we had to use our own conception, however limited it was. And Bill's going to take us through what we call the first, second step question.
Before I do that, you might notice that he's mentioned the word prejudice a few times.
Mm-hmm.
He actually mentions that word on page 45, 46, 47, twice on 48, 49, twice on 51, and again on 55. So obviously he's trying to throw out something. If he keeps repeating it over and over again, it's pretty important that we need to lay aside our prejudice and ask ourselves, what do we really believe? Instead of having old conceptions, sometimes of which don't work for us anymore. Like when I came into AA, I believed in the, you know, get even, God's going to get me, I'm bad, so I'm going in hell kind of God. And that just didn't work for me. So I needed to scrap everything and start over. And develop my own concept of a higher power, which for me was probably one of the most respectful and considerate things anybody had ever done for me, because up until that point, my family and my religion told me what I had to believe, and if I believed differently, I was wrong. So for me to come here and be told, you can believe whatever you want to believe as long as it's not you, for me that was one of the most respectful things anybody had ever done for me. And like Mike said, this is the first, second step question. And we'll come back to it when we finish this chapter. We need to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, as in an agnostic, or am I even willing to believe, as in an atheist, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically or strongly assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. And again, down at the bottom it says, please be sure that you read the spiritual experience appendix back in the page 569. So that's the third time that they're driving us back to that appendix. It's so important. That was great news for us, for we had assumed we could not make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith, which seemed difficult to believe. When people presented us with spiritual approaches, how frequently did we all say, I wish I had what that man has. I'm sure it would work if I could only believe as he believes. But I cannot accept as surely true the many articles of faith which are so plain to him. So it was comforting to learn that we could commence at a simpler level. You might notice there that it's saying that there's a point that we can start at before faith. I know throughout my life people had said to me, Bill, you know, you have to have faith. And I would just look at them and say, you know, I just don't know what you're talking about. And what this is saying is, it's sort of a review of the steps, actually. But I guess 8 years ago now, I had lost my license for 4 years and 3 months. And what's interesting about that is that none of it was for drunk driving. So figure that one out. And when I got my car back, I bought a used car. A couple months later, I started having problems with it. Now, I had moved to an area where I didn't have my license, and now that I have my license and I have a car, I'm living in an area where I don't know of any mechanics. So I started asking around. I'm having trouble with my car. You know, can you tell me about any good mechanics? And for some reason, these two people that I worked with both mentioned this one guy in Middlesex. His name is John, and I highly recommend him. But at that time, I didn't know him, and I didn't know anything about him. So in hearing two people that I respected, you know, offer this guy as a possible mechanic that I could go to, in the first step, I saw that I had a problem that I had to do something about. In the second step, I came to believe that somebody could help me. In the third step, I made a decision to let John help me. And then in 4 through 12, I took some actions to bring about getting my car to his shop. He worked on it. He finished it before he said that he'd be done with it. It didn't cost more than he told me that it was going to cost. When I got the car back, it worked just as good, as if not better, as before I got it fixed. So now I started with believing that this guy could help me. But then after taking some actions and having the experience with him, I now had faith that this guy was a good mechanic. So what this is saying, we need to start before faith, we need to start with a belief. In some cases, you'll hear people say, you know, believe that we believe. And again, you know, as long as you're not the power, that's a decent place to start. But after making a decision to let that power work with us, and then taking some actions to work in that direction, then we can have an experience, then we'll get results, and then we can have faith that this power could help us. So this is saying we need to start at belief first. Besides the seeming inability to accept much on faith, we often found ourselves handicapped by obstinacy, sensitiveness, and unreasoning prejudice. And there's that prejudice again. And if you didn't know, obstinacy is stubbornness. And that's telling us what the blocks are to spiritual growth. Our stubbornness, being sensitive, perhaps the spiritual references or whatever, or other, you know, not being open-minded to hearing what other people believe, and then unreasoning prejudice again. So those are some warnings. Many of us have been so touchy that even a casual reference to spiritual things made us bristle, which means become agitated with antagonism or hostility. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned. So, we can ask ourselves, am I experiencing a lot of this, especially around spiritual terms and about spirituality? Because this is saying that that in and of itself will block us off from progressing on a spiritual path. Though some of us resisted, we found no great difficulty in casting aside such feelings. Faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. In this respect, alcohol was the great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. And notice that it says that alcohol is the great persuader. We as sponsors aren't the great persuader. The judge isn't the great persuader. The police isn't the great persuader. My boss telling me that if I ever drink again isn't the great persuader. That alcohol is the great persuader, and that will bring us to a point of surrender, and that will bring us to a point of powerlessness. Sometimes this was a tedious process. We hope no one else will be as prejudiced for as long as some of us were. So there's
instead.
Middle of the next page, 49. Instead of regarding ourselves as intelligent agents, spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation, we agnostics and atheists chose to believe that our human intelligence was the last word, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end of all. Rather vain of us, wasn't it? And of course, that's sort of describing the way we play God. We who have traveled the dubious or uncertain path beg you to lay aside prejudice, even against organized religion. We have learned that whatever the human frailties of various faiths may be, those faiths have given purpose and direction to millions. People of faith have a logical idea of what life is all about. Actually, we used to have no reasonable conception whatever. We used to amuse ourselves by cynically dissecting spiritual beliefs and practices, when we might have observed that many spiritual-minded persons of all races, colors, and creeds were demonstrating a degree of stability, happiness, and usefulness which we should have sought ourselves. And that's another one of those questions or another one of those sentences in the book that I need to ask myself, is this the way my life is? Am I living a stable, happy, and useful life? It's describing a positive spiritual path to grow toward, and I need to ask myself, am I moving in that direction? top of 50. Instead, we looked at the human defects of these people and sometimes used their shortcomings as a basis of wholesale condemnation. We talked of intolerance while we are intolerant ourselves. And that describes a large part of my life. We miss the reality and the beauty of the forest because we are diverted by the ugliness of some of its trees. We never gave the spiritual side of life a fair hearing. So again, we can ask ourselves with that statement, is that the way we're going to live in our life? Now notice what it says here, just like it said back on 29. It says, in our personal stories, you will find a wide variation in the way each teller approaches and conceives of the power which is greater than himself. Whether we agree with a particular approach or conception seems to make little difference. Experience has taught us that these are not matters about which, for our purpose, we need not be worried. They are questions for each individual to settle for himself. On one proposition, however, these men and women are strikingly agreed. Every one of them has, one, gained access to, and two, believes in a power greater than himself. This power has in each case accomplished the miraculous, the humanly impossible. As a celebrated American statesman put it, let's look at the record. Now notice this group of people they're going to describe here. It says, here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed, and I'm going to personalize this because you'll understand as I go through. I flatly declare that since I have, one, come to believe in a power greater than myself, which is like step two, two, to take a certain attitude toward that power, which is like step three, and three, to do certain simple things, which is steps 4 through 12, there have been a revolutionary change in my way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, and in the face of total failure of my human resources, and they're sort of described in step one there, I found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into me. This happened soon after I wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. Again, steps 1 through 12. Once confused and baffled by the seeming futility of existence, I showed the underlying reasons why I was making a heavy going of life. Now, again, they're describing step 1 kind of stuff. Now, leaving aside the drink question, so let's disregard the drink question completely. Let's talk about how I'm living my life. I tell why living was so unsatisfactory. I show how the change came over me when I am able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact in my life. I present a powerful reason why one should have faith. And like the book said many times, and like the book's going to say many times, that's why our fellowship is so important, is to carry a message of hope to the new person. Because we can talk about God all we want, but if a new person isn't seeing changes within us and isn't seeing us having tools that perhaps the new person can use to work through problems and to get through life and to have a more satisfying way of life, we are going to be useless to a new person. So we need to be living this, and the fellowship is so important that this is the kind of message that we need to carry to new people. Let's turn to 52, please. Right, middle of page 52. We went over this last week. This is one of the better descriptions of the spiritual malady. Again, if you weren't here last week, we gave out a whole lot of stuff about the spiritual malady. Please see one of us after the meeting if you don't have that, because it's some pretty powerful stuff. And basically what we did was we took out of this book what being spiritually blocked off looks like, not only on the outside, but also on the inside, how it affects us on the inside with how we're feeling. And these are some of the better ones. It says, I had to ask myself why I shouldn't apply my human problems to the same readiness to change my point of view. Now here's the spiritual malady descriptions. I was having trouble with personal relationships. I couldn't control my emotional nature. I was a prey to misery and depression. I couldn't make a living. Now not only is that work, but that's also our finances, and that's also, am I ever flow of a meeting. I had a feeling of uselessness. I was full of fear. I was unhappy. I couldn't be seen to be of real help to other people. Was not the basic solution of these bedevilments. And I love how Bill uses words, and he again used a perfect word. Bedevilments means to torment maliciously. This is the stuff that rattles around in us and slowly but surely heads us toward another drink, because alcohol helps us with this. And that's why we focus so much on this spiritual malady, because the more this kind of stuff is going on, the more unmanageable and uncomfortable we are on the inside, the more drinking is going to become an option, because alcohol helps us with this. But the steps can create a way of life where these conditions aren't existing to any kind of large extent within us. We're comfortable within ourselves. We're not looking to drink alcohol because we like how we feel on the inside, and we don't want to change that. It says, well, that was not the basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was.
So, again, last week we took a look at these eight different areas, and if you had the spiritual malady exercise, it was actually a total of 15 areas. But that's for step one. How can we use this paragraph now for step two? Let me walk us through that real quick. If we weren't having trouble with personal relationships, what would that look like? If we could control our emotional natures, or better yet, had a power greater than ourselves that comes from within us that does that for us, what would that look like? What would it look like if I wasn't subjected to misery and depression anymore? What would it look like if I could make a happy and successful life? What would it look like if I had a feeling of usefulness rather than uselessness? What would it look like if I didn't have fear? What would it look like if I was happy? And what would it look like that if I really could, finally, in my life, seem to be of real help to other people? And this is what we get to do in the second step exercise that Bill touched on before in the handout, is we get to build a vision. We can do that in step two. We get to build a vision for our lives. And the way that vision can manifest for us is by 3 through 12. We have a description of the problem in step one. Step two gives us a description of the solution. Step one, we see how our lives are unmanageable and we see all the negative things, so to speak. With step two, we get to build a vision of if we didn't have those negative things in our life, and if we weren't powerless, and if we had power, how would our lives look like? How would our internal condition be? And thank God we have 10 more steps that enables us to carry out that vision.
The cool thing that I like about the step two exercise is that after we come up with the vision and the ideal of what would it look like if we were moving away from all those things that we just read, at the bottom of the step two exercise, there's something that's really key. And it asks a question that, are we able on our own power without God's help to bring about this ideal that we now just wrote down, which would be our ideal for all those 15 areas that the Big Book talks about that when we're spiritually blocked off? Are we capable on our own power to head in the direction of that ideal, that sanity ideal of what those areas would look like? And again, I really like that because then it catapults us into realizing, you know what, if I was capable of bringing about that ideal, it would already be in my life, and since it's not, I do need to find a higher power to help me with this. And again, it catapults us into the third step to make a decision to head toward that power by working steps 4 through 12.
When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. If you would, skip over to the middle of page 53. And this is what we like to call the second step question, or proposition, or choice. When we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else He is nothing. God either is or He isn't. What was our choice to be? So possibly for those who maybe still struggle with this idea of God, let me just change a word around in this paragraph and see if you can find a newfound willingness. When we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that living by spiritual principles is going to be everything or else nothing. Living by spiritual principles either is the solution or it isn't. What is our choice going to be? Arrived at this point, we were, and again, we're going to come back to that question when we do a wrapper on this chapter. Arrived at this point, we were squarely confronted with the question of faith. We couldn't duck the issue. Some of us had already walked far over the bridge of reason towards the desire shore of faith. The outlines and the promise of the new land had brought lust to tired eyes and fresh courage to lagging spirits. Friendly hands had stretched out and welcomed. We were grateful that reason had brought us so far, but somehow we couldn't quite step ashore. Perhaps we had been leaning too heavily on reason that last mile, and we did not like to lose our support. That was natural, but let us think a little more closely. Without knowing it, had we not been brought to where we stood by a certain kind of faith? For did we not believe in our own reasoning? Did we not have confidence in our ability to think? Did we not have faith and reliance upon alcohol? What was that but a sort of faith? Yes, we had been faithful, objectionably faithful to the God of reason. So in one way or another, we discovered that faith had been involved all the time. Should we skip? Okay. First full paragraph on 55. Three lines down. Yet we had been seeing another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world. People who rose above their problems. They said God made these things possible, and we only smiled. We had seen spiritual release, but like to tell ourselves it wasn't true.
Again, that's why the fellowship is so important. They need to be seeing people like that. That God made these things possible.
So finally they're going to tell us exactly where to find this idea of God. Actually, we are fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured or blocked by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, by resentments, by fears, by harms we do to others, by inappropriate sexual conduct or just inappropriate conduct in general. But in some form or other, it was there. This fundamental idea of God is there, always has been, and always was. I've come to see it as my true inner nature. What I was before I was even born, and what I've always been, that fundamental idea has always been there. My problem is that I've always blocked it out through those things that I just mentioned. And thank God Alcoholics Anonymous gives an inventory where we can see the ways that we block God out. And then the fifth step, it begins in the fourth step, but really in the fifth step, we begin to cast those things out. We begin to slowly, slowly clear away those blocks. And then on through 6 and 7, which clears a little bit more. And on through 8 and 9, which clears it more. And we come to that even clear. Excuse me. We come to that even keel. And then through 10, 11, and 12, we can keep the blocks from coming back. Beautiful process we have in these 12 steps.
And it's interesting, too, because we all have experienced that inner voice that we all have. Some people call it the conscience or your inner guide or whatever. I know there were times that a part of me was saying, Bill, you know, I don't think it's a good idea that you take that. And you know, Bill, you know, maybe help that lady across the street or... you know, and sometimes I listen to it and sometimes I don't. And when I listen to it, my life is inevitably really wonderful. And when I don't listen to it, it's usually the reason why I get into trouble. So deep down within us, we have that peace that's within us that sometimes we just don't look at much. And it's almost like the more we listen to it, the stronger it gets and the easier it is to recognize it. And it almost seems like the more that we blow it off, the kind of weaker it gets. And it never dies out, it never goes away. It's always there. But, 10 years ago, I could do something that it wouldn't affect me on the inside. But today, if I was to do that same thing, it would rip me apart because my conscience and my mind would just eat me up inevitably. You know what I mean? And it's interesting how it never really ever went away. But now that I try to listen to it more and more, the stronger it is and the easier it is for me to realize that that's what's speaking to me on the inside, and the easier it is for me to head in a certain direction, which is what the steps are all about.
Continuing on, for faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. And that's why the stories in the back of the book are so important. They tell exactly how people have recovered from alcoholism, especially the stories in the early pioneer section, through a spiritual experience or through a spiritual awakening. You know, that's a demonstration of the power in our human lives. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Now, if you remember back on page 45, they told us that we had to find a power greater than ourselves. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. And then it goes on to say, but where and how were we to find this power? And now in this next sentence, the next two sentences actually, they tell us exactly how and where. So the point that they touched on page 45, 10 pages later, they answer it for us. So sometimes we had to search fearlessly, and that's how. That's how we're going to find the power, by searching fearlessly. But he was there. He, or God, was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality, capital G, capital R, and this is where, deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that God may be found. It was so with us. We can only clear the ground a bit if our testimony helps, one, sweep away prejudice, two, enables you to think honestly, and encourages you to, three, search diligently within yourself. Then, if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, and what attitude are they talking about? Well, they're talking about having an attitude of sweeping away prejudice, thinking honestly, and having the willingness to search diligently within yourself. So with those three pieces of the puzzle, with that attitude, you cannot fail. You cannot fail in this process.
The paragraph before that, it ends with, in the last analysis, it is only there where he may be found. Bill knew us self-centered alcoholics pretty well, that he knew that we looked everywhere else outside of us. Drugs, alcohol, sex, jobs, money, possessions. We always looked outside of ourselves to fill that hole that was lacking within us. But only when we seek within do we then find the answer that we're actually looking for.
The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you.
And then if you turn to page 57, what we just skipped over here is a gentleman's spiritual experience. You might want to read it, but we're pretty much out of time, so let's go to the end. It says, what is this but a miracle of healing? The first full paragraph on 57. Yet its elements are simple. Circumstances made him willing to believe, steps 1 and 2. He humbly offered himself to his maker, step 3, and then he knew. Even so, has God restored us all to our right minds. To this man, the revelation was sudden. He had a spiritual experience. Some of us grow into it more slowly, as in a spiritual awakening. But he has come to all who have honestly sought him. When we draw near to him, then he discloses himself to us. God gives us free will. We can do whatever we want to do. But as soon as we take that half a step toward wanting to get to know our higher power better, he then discloses himself to us. And I always like saying that the way that we draw closer to our higher power is through prayer and doing his will. And the way he discloses himself to us is through meditation and through others. So for me, that's a really incredible promise there as well. So I guess let's go back and do the two questions together as a group. The first one is in the middle of page 47. Did we do it together as a group? 3:27. Sorry about that. Commercial break. It says, do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? Why don't we take a few seconds and think about that? And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to say 1, 2, 3, and then we can all answer together as a group. So again, do we now believe, or are we even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than ourselves? 1, 2, 3. Yes. Okay, and then the next one is in the middle of page 53. Now, what I also should have said for that first question there, which I guess I just kind of blew it, but ask yourselves if you agree with this too. This is actually a statement that can be used with the first second step question for those of us that are already on the path, or for those of us that have already gone through the steps perhaps once or more and other times. This is the question. This is how this question, because you know, at that point we believe, so what sort of a deeper level of the step two question, what's a deeper spiritual essence of the step two question? And this is how it goes. But do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself that can take me beyond where I am now in every area of my life, past here, past the experience I've already had? Do I believe that there are realms of peace, love, freedom, happiness, existence, understanding, wisdom, and power that I cannot even imagine? So that's sort of the deeper essence of the second step question that we can ask ourselves for those of us that are already on the path. And then again, on page 53, it says, when I became an alcoholic, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, I could not postpone or evade. And notice that says self-imposed crisis. Later on, it also tells us that alcohol is not our problem. Self-centeredness is our problem. It says, I had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was my choice to be? So, something that I always like about that question is, inevitably, and I've never got anybody to disagree with me, and I'd like you all to think about it for a second, I'd like to suggest that every area in our life that we have not included God, or have not said, in this area of my life, God is everything, and I'm going to live my life that way, that those are the areas that we don't do that are the areas that we're having problems. That all the areas that we say, God is everything in my work, I'm going to be honest, I'm going to be loving, I'm going to be unselfish, I'm going to have pure motivations, that those areas of our life are going really well. And the areas of our life that we're not willing to include our higher power are the areas where we have problems. So let's think about this for a few seconds, and then I'll ask us to answer a question after 1, 2, and 3. Are we willing to fearlessly face the proposition that God is everything or he is nothing, that either God is or he isn't, in all areas of our life? What is our choice to be? Okay, so again, are we willing to face the proposition that God is everything or he is nothing in all areas of our life? 1, 2, 3. Yes.
So again, we can use that statement as a tool when we do our second step exercise. That if this were to manifest, if God is everything in every area of my life, or if spiritual living, or if a spiritual solution is everything in every area of my life, what would that look like? Now, in some cases, we're going to absolutely have no comprehension of what that could look like, and this isn't an exercise to be like a self-fulfilled prophecy or anything like that. It's just trying to build us some vision, because the 10th step talks a lot about vision, and Bill and I have found it very useful that if we can start here, especially since we had been through the steps a few times. We found this a really useful tool. One thing I'd just like to touch on about the page 47 question. Again, Bill said that, Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself which can take me past here, which can take me past every area of my life? You don't have to raise your hand, but how many people in this room have been sober for a while, or if you have another affliction, have been abstinent for a while, but you're having problems with something else? My case, I had been off of booze for a few years, but I was having problems in other areas of my life. In the areas of overeating, in the areas of sexual conduct, you know, internet pornography. We, especially the men, we drunks are good for that kind of stuff. You know, the list can go on and on and on. Spending money I don't necessarily have. You know, can God and spiritual living, which manifests the power of God in my life, can that power take me past those areas too? See, today, I know God works for alcohol. What about everything else? You know, we're not looking at a perfect world here. We're not looking at perfect lives. But is it possible that there is some power that can treat that inward unmanageability that causes the outward unmanageability in my life? Yeah. So maybe that's something to not only think about tonight, but maybe during the next week as you do the second step exercise.
We get to talk about it next time?
Sure. Sure, absolutely. For anyone that's new here tonight, hasn't been here before, the meeting typically goes for 90 minutes. Bill and I usually share for an hour, and then we open it up to you guys for a half hour. We started about 5 minutes late, so we can go to 5 or 10 minutes after the hour, however you guys want to do it. Do you have anything you want to add?
You know, with the second step exercise, I mean, don't get us wrong. I mean, with our limited, finite minds, we're going to try to come up with an ideal. But believe me, God's idea for sanity in those areas could be a whole lot different than whatever ours is going to be.
Yeah.
But it's just good to have sort of an ideal to grow toward. And then as time passes, sometimes that ideal changes somewhat. And, you know, I remember working with somebody who was a musician, and he was afraid to turn his will and his life over to God because he was afraid that God will not want him to play music anymore. And all I could say to this gentleman was, why would God give you a passion and an incredible ability for something and then not want you to share that with his other children? So, you know, sometimes we just have this hole in the donut attitude toward what happens when I turn my will and my life over to God. And, you know, I heard this gentleman say this once, that, you know, what God has in mind for me is better than anything I'll ever have in mind for me. And that's my concept of a higher power. And that's what I believe. And that's where my faith has brought me. And that's how I look at all of this.
So when we get together next week, having completed our second step exercises, we'll get into step three. It's amazing how after 6 or 7, after being on the first step for 6 weeks, we're finally starting to progress along. And I think that says something for the necessity to really have a grasp of the first step. But we'll go through the third step next week. We have yet again another exercise, which I think you guys will find really neat. And then the week after that, we'll get into inventory. So at this point, we'll shut off the tape and open up the meeting for discussion. Thanks for letting us share.